in the morning.
14 minutes after 7 is where we're at this morning, and we move along now to our next feature. Now, Minister of Basic Education Angie Motshekga has outlined the new return plans for South African schools. If you recall, on Friday, that was last Friday, the 3rd of July, the Department of Basic Education postponed the return of a number of school grades, citing the rising number of COVID cases in the country. Of course, today we understand that the grade 6s as well as grade 11s nationally will return to school. But to help us understand and make sense of the past month, as well as the plan outlined yesterday online, we do have Professor Aslam Fattah, Research Chair in Transformation and Professor in the Department of Education for Policy Studies at Stellenbosch University. Professor, good morning. Aslamu alaikum. Thanks for joining us. Of course, before we get into, you know, the plan shared and outlined yesterday, you know, it's been a month roughly since the grade 7s as well as grade 12s have headed back to school. Since then, we've also seen teachers as well as parents protesting for the closure of schools. We've also seen, you know, around about 4% of schools at some point or the other within the past month closed due to positive COVID cases. Your observations?
Yes, my observations is that the debate around the reopening of schools, the phased reopening of schools, is heavily and fundamentally impacted by a number of contending parties who are raising major concerns about it, especially concerned parents, but also very powerfully unions, and also a generalized anxiety about infections and the possibility of infections of children and so on. That has impacted the continual reduction in the number of grades who are going to school, continual reduction in how we are going to phase in these grades and so on. And the question that your listeners may rightly ask, what's going on? Well, my answer to what's going on is that we have the politicians, the government, in a situation in which they want to save the school year, or a semblance of the school year on the other hand, but the virus is creating the kind of anxiety amongst the general populace, particularly parents, that are leading to all kinds of questions, resistance, and protests that creates a platform of indecision by the government. They, on the one hand, want to save the school year. On the other hand, they have to respond to the pressure. And this is why we're sitting with the kind of situation that we are currently in.
Certainly. So for those that are asking, you know, in terms of the reaction from parents, unions, teachers, you know, is it having an impact? Would you say correctly, yes?
Yes, indeed. It absolutely has an impact. But when you listen to the minister, she cannot be seen to be kowtowing to the pressure.
Mm.
So she brings in a number of charts, a number of projections. She makes pronouncements on percentages of infection. And she presents a very rational picture about why they are downscaling the implementation and so on and so forth. But at the root of it is the public pressure that's bubbling up. And that is politically creating a problem for the management. And the way in which you do that is that you release the lid a little bit to let the public pressure go out. And the way you release the lid is that you downscale on the on those who go to school. But you don't entirely stop it because you have an objective, and the objective is just to keep schools open.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at yesterday's plan that was shared. You know, anything new, anything surprising, you know, that we didn't already hear, you know, earlier on this or last month in June when grade 7s and 12s headed back to school. Of course, we know that various other grades will be phased in during the course of July.
Well, everything is surprising and nothing is surprising. I think a month ago, six weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
that we've entered into a situation of uncertainty about which grades and then reducing it. We are in that space and we will continue to be in that space. So that is not surprising. Why? Because government have to address the public pressure that's coming up. So in that sense. But what is surprising always is how they make the decisions. For example, on Thursday when they downscaled it for 4 grades coming back to primary school, they downscaled it to grade R and grade 6 coming back, right? So my question is, why grade R?
Mm.
So the answer that I'm giving myself, reading this thing very closely, is that there is public pressure from middle class sections of our community to bring younger children back, on the basis also of the mobilizing of scientific positions by especially the South African Pediatrics Association, which has been extremely cavalier for a medical association to begin to argue that children are less infectious, children are not going to infect other people, children don't need a social distancing. They literally argue that, if you listen closely. And so, but what is underneath that? What's underneath that is that these are middle-class parents who can socially distance, who can support their kids, these kids go to schools where all of these things are in place. They're pushing them to come back. Politically also, it makes sense relative to the political pressures around the economy and so on and so forth. But then, by Sunday, the logic is we don't want to move away from the grade R, but we realize that grade R in public schools, in working class schools, will be very difficult because that's where the public pressure is. And then we say, and here's the surprise, and then we say, grade R's don't have to come back to school, they're not ready, but they have to be phased in by the end of the year. Now, those kind of logics are surprising.
Yes. Of course, you know, some might ask, you know, in the statement it was mentioned that, you know, those grade R's that are already going to school should remain at school. What does that mean exactly? If you're saying grade R's that have already started going to school, so as of today, they will go to school, they should remain at school. So as a parent, if I feel, hey, you know what, after a week or two, I'm not comfortable with my kid being in school, can I not then opt to supervise them at home?
Yes, you can. But what they're referring to is that in independent schools, we know them as private schools, and the early childhood sector in the more middle class areas, people of grade R's have already come to school, or they have already been educated via online technologies and so on. So the educational process has just gone in a different mode, right? So bringing them back to school literally means that we are continuing in the new normal of teaching them and so on and so forth. But the minister conceded already 2 months ago that you do not have to, you can opt not to bring your child to school.
Yes.
But then you have to put in place the application of a homeschooling position.
Correct.
And you have to ensure that your children are educated at home. Right. Now, let me ask the listeners the question, which parents can do that? Right?
Exactly.
Can the overwhelming majority of parents educate their children at home? So when that decision gets made by a parent who lives in a working class area, goes to send the child to a working class school, they are doing it predominantly because they are not confident that those school environments will be able to protect their children. There is not a calculation about I'm going to educate my child at home, because that won't happen. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take care of my child at home so that the child doesn't become infected. So the debate about children is a very varied debate, and what listeners always have to ask, who's making the argument? What is the class and poverty basis of people?
Yes.
If you, for example, look at who is protesting on the Kerkplatz, it is stark that those people in working class and impoverished areas are protesting all over Cape Town this morning from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Why? Because those are the environments in which we cannot secure conditions for teachers and children to return safely.
Professor, you know, every time we mention that, you know, schools are opening and closing, we're literally referring to schools on the Cape Flats, almost always, and never your private schools, for instance. So, you know, when the DBE as well as the WCED come back and say, oh no, but it's just 4% or it's just 2% or it's a handful of schools, you know, does that argument still stand, or is it getting a bit stale? Because every single time you mention, you know, teachers have perhaps a valid point, close the schools, you know, give us a few months, let's perhaps, you know, see out the year and carry on next year. They always refer to this, you know, small percentage. You know, is it something that we should perhaps say, okay, it's the new norm, let's carry on with life?
Look, there are two kinds of arguments that people make around sending people back to school. The first argument is that the signs speak, right? Now, I want to incontrovertibly say to you that the South African Pediatric Association, the signs do not speak clearly because they have changed their view. The view, for example, that children aren't infected, they have bought into that view. Well, we've just read an enormous study in the USA where this study argues and suggests that the findings are that children as young as 6, 5, 4 years old are equally infectious. Now, what do we believe? Now, in the absence of stability about believing science, you tell parents that. You're creating an anxiety about the science in the first place. Secondly, as I suggested, is that this debate has a class basis. It's poor parents, teachers in poverty schools that are arguing that they are not safe. Now, the second mobilizing instrument is statistics speak, right? Now, 4%. If that is cold comfort to a situation in a working class school, I'm talking about a particular school in the Mitchell's Plain area where the principal explains that he has 10 to 11 teachers absent every day, only has 30 teachers, where he only has a 50% attendance of matriculants, where when those matriculants come to school, they are hardly able to focus on the curriculum and get through the curriculum to deal with preparation for matric and so on and so forth. So the actual qualitative experience belies the numbers that we are well granted. So the number says 4%, right? But go into every school and see how those numbers play themselves out. Then you see the impossibility of the situation.
Sure. Prof, we have about 30 seconds to go. You know, any final remarks from yourself this morning?
Well, the final remark here is that there is a big problem about learning loss that our children particularly will affect our children, particularly in the working class areas. That is indeed an important thing. So I think that schools, the entire educational fraternity, parents and so on, have to come up with alternative ways of educating their children in respect of schools' inability to secure their health and safety. We cannot, on the one hand, say we are not sending our children to school, and I basically support that position, and on the other hand say, but we are not going to educate them. We are now in a situation in which we have to do both. We have to support them in terms of their safety, even if that means keeping them at home. And we have to make sure that some learning goes on, which is a very, very difficult thing in the kinds of homes that we have. But we cannot drop the ball on the dimension of the learning of our children that needs to take place.
Sure.
But we have to do both. Safety is the most important, but the learning also extremely important.
Absolutely. Professor Aslam Fattah, we'll have to leave it at that. As always, an absolute pleasure, and we welcome your insight on the matter this morning. And that was a research chair in transformation and professor in the Department of Education for Policy Studies at Stellenbosch University, Professor Aslam Fattah.